Hello, I'm Jack.
And I'm Daniel.
That was so radio, DJ, wasn't it?
Hello!
You're listening to Queer Punks Podcast.
We are a progressive and hopefully funny show picking apart pop culture and examining the issues that most affect queer people.
Because we're decent citizens. You can visit our site at queerpunks... No, it's not. It's qpunks, Q-P-U-N-X, at .tumblr.com. To find links to all the stories to talk about today, as well as ways to listen to the bands we are showcasing. Because we're doing a news show that also has music on it.
Like a more of a music show that has news on it.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we found that we saw that there are plenty of good news shows out there, like In the Sprawl, which is one of the best podcasts, I think, that exists.
Ever.
Which covers queer issues, but there isn't really a huge focus on that show of music. And there are like queer music shows, such as Homo Ground, which is really good, and Take Nothing, Leave Everything with CJ Ray, which is,
he's
nice. So we wanted to sort of mix the two together, because, well, for me anyway, hello, I'm Jack, by the way, and this is Daniel.
Hi, I'm Daniel.
Hello. For me anyway, I really like politics and music and political music.
As do I. I feel this is something that we share.
Yeah.
And that's why we're doing it together.
I get it. That was also... I thought it was romantic, but it was just a sex joke.
Yeah, innuendo's going to be a big part of this.
Oh, okay, cool. So, we should explain the structure of the show.
Okay. So, I think the basic idea is that we're going to do some, like, news sections. We're going to talk a bit about, like, pop culture in the media and things like that that are going on at the moment. Queer issues that we're seeing in the media at the moment. I'd say Russia right now is going to be a big talking point for quite a while.
Yeah.
And then we're going to play some music.
Yeah. And we won't spoil what that music is yet. You'll just have to wait and find out. It'll probably be in the description and episode title for the show. Yeah. So you already know. We don't fully know yet. And then in the second half of the show, so we're going to have news, then a song, and then an in-depth topic every week. And today's in-depth topic
is going to be... Are we doing Gaga?
We're doing Gaga.
We're going to do Gaga today.
We're doing Gaga. We were going to do Cher. Oh, no,
Cher's
the first
part. We're going to chat about Cher.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we're going to do a proper conversation about Gaga.
Yeah, so pretty gay.
Pretty gay.
And then more music, and then the show will be over, and hopefully that was an hour of your life not wasted.
Yeah.
See, we can do this. This is a podcast. It's working. So, our first news story is...
Let's talk about the Olympics and the Winter Olympics in Sochi do you want to talk a little bit about the compromise that people are trying to get between saying that we should boycott it or saying that we should not boycott it?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so we should explain why people are wanting to boycott the Winter Olympics in Russia, because maybe, listeners, you have no idea. So, recently it's been discovered, and although this has been going on for a long time, it seems to be the sort of cause du jour, see, French, of a lot of people, a lot of lefty liberal types, hopefully our friends, because Russia has introduced the sort of laws that are like, you can't say gay.
Yeah.
Don't say gay was one of the bills. And, you know, like, it's a criminal offence to promote the homosexual agenda. That type of language, which is obviously hugely damaging for queer people all over Russia. So a lot of sort of, I would say, like, white Western liberal type people are saying, hey, we should boycott the Olympics, because if they're not going to let gays walk on the streets there with their colours, we're not going to go there and support them. And when that call was first made, I was, like, really behind that, because Dan Savage was saying that, and Dan Savage is, you know, great.
Stephen Fry said it, and he's, like...
He did.
He's a gay man.
Yeah, and he's middle class, I guess. So,
he's really intelligent.
He's white.
Yeah.
Yeah, so So yeah, so obviously we rush to trust these old white men who are middle class.
And Tatchell.
And Tatchell. Oh, so just everyone with loads of privilege, yeah, I guess.
All these rich white privileged people, yeah, saying what we should all be thinking, basically.
Yeah. So anyway, the Russian LGBT network put a statement out, which I don't have to hand, but it was good, and it said, "Hey, please don't boycott the Russian Olympics. We need people there with rainbow flags and with, you know, showing that gay people exist." And the worry was with the West boycotting the Olympics. In Russia, homosexuality and queerness are seen as Western imports. And it was, you know, if we'd like damaged the Russian economy by taking the Olympics away from them and all the, you know, supposed financial gains that brings, then that would have been seen as another sort of reason that gays and queers are evil. Yeah.
I read a really good good thing. Who was it who said about the Olympics in 1939 in Berlin, yes, which was a really big thing, and it was more important to him that he went and did it and won than not go as a stand against the Nazis. It was bigger for him to go there and make the stand in front of them.
Yeah, and we wouldn't have the sort of Black Power salute now. Yeah. You know, that iconic photo wouldn't have happened. Yeah. And I think that photo made a lot of change. So yeah, that was the call from Russian activists anyway. And it sort of makes sense to listen to people in these sort of situations who are actually there experiencing it. Because we all saw the BuzzFeed article of like 38 reasons why Russia's terrible. And it was just a load of like queer activists getting beaten up by the police at a pride parade. So, I mean, yeah, the people on the ground are saying, don't boycott us. So, I mean, yeah.
But we've got influential gay athletes as well, saying like Johnny Weir, the gay US figure skater, who said that he doesn't want them to boycott for the same reasons that they're saying it in Russia. You know, it's a bigger stand for him to be there. He said, "I am directly against a boycott of any kind. While many people can sit on their couch at home and say, 'Oh, we shouldn't go to Russia because it's bad,' staying away is something I think is the worst possible thing we can do."
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he got a lot of criticism, Johnny Weir, the gay US figure skater, got a lot of criticism for basically saying that, because people were like, "Hey, you're betraying the gays in the West." And yeah, read this quote.
And so to that he said, "Before a gay man, before a white man, I am an Olympian. That's what I worked for from age 12, and a boycott would negate all of that. It would basically punish all of the non-LGBT athletes that would be on the US Olympic team for Sochi. Even if we stay away, Russia will still put on an Olympics. They will win all of the medals, and it will be even more of a propaganda machine for Russia."
Yeah, so, and I guess if like Westerners want any influence on what's happening with Russian LGBT rights, yeah, like you can't not go, I guess.
Yeah.
I was like really not fixed in my position on this issue until we started talking about it. Now I'm like, the boycott is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm like pro boycotts in other spheres, like Israel and Palestine. Yeah, let's just get that out on the front of this show.
This shall also be a regular topic, I feel.
Well, actually, queer rights in like Israel and Palestine are really, really important as well. Yeah. We'll get onto that at some point.
We should discuss it. It's something I'd like to learn more about as well.
Okay.
I'm with you there, listeners. Listener.
Hello. Please don't leave.
John.
He's John.
I don't know. That's our listener's name.
So, I thought we wanted to read out Cher's amazing statement, actually.
Because what this all comes down to, what we should all be thinking about, is what Cher says on every single topic that we are discussing. So, here's Cher's piece on the Olympics. "I can't name names, but my friend called, who is a big oligarch over there, and asked me if I'd like to be an ambassador for the Olympics and open the show. I immediately said no. I want to know why all of this gay hate just exploded over there. He said the Russian people don't feel the way the government does."
Thanks, Cher.
Thank you, Cher.
Yeah, I mean, she's on our side.
I love Cher.
She's just friends with a big oligarch.
I've just got this Russian oligarch.
That's just mental.
She's been around since, like, long before communism.
Yeah, probably.
She was over there with Rasputin.
Yeah. So I'm going to get the quote from Dan Savage, right? Because I was really, like...
Sorry, did I just hit that?
You're just ruining everything. It's fine. So, like, Dan Savage, I'm, like... I don't know how to feel about him now because, like, he's one of my personal heroes, I've always said. Because I really like his stance on how sex-positive he is. And, like, on gay rights and get, like... But it's gay rights, you know? It's only gay rights. So it's, like, on same-sex marriage, he's really great. On adoption, he's really great. You know, he has a son and he's married. Is he married? I feel like he's not married yet. Yeah, he will be getting married either way. So his statement on this whole thing, and I think it was sort of him that brought attention to it, sort of, for, like, the mainstream. Because Dan Savage in the... Like, so he's a sex columnist, and he has a sexual advice podcast called Savage Love, which is really good, and I would recommend you listen to. But whenever he talks about, like, international politics, he comes across as just a privileged, white, cis guy. You know, despite the gay thing. So his, like, statement on this, I'll try and read out. Very bad at reading. So he was interviewed on Radio Free Europe a week ago. Are you in communication with the Russian LGBT activists about the situation on the ground? And Savage replied, I'm getting a very clear picture. I live in Seattle, Washington, and there isn't a large Russian or Russian gay community here. The large Russian community and large Russian gay community is in New York City, and I'm following very closely their statements and following meetings that are going on there. I visited Moscow in 1990 and met with gay people there. And it just breaks my heart that they were so full of hope for their futures and for the progress that they hoped their country would make as it joined the civilized world. Oh my god, I didn't even pick up that he'd put civilized world in there at the end. That's so, like... I feel like orientalist is probably the wrong word to use there, but, like, it's so privileged, I guess? Because it's not like Russia wasn't civilized. Like,
the West.
The West.
The West.
Is the only thing that matters. Yeah, oh no, oh no. So, yeah, he went to Russia 23 years ago, and obviously sort of feels like that's enough.
Yeah, I saw Russia once. I watched it on TV. Yeah. So I know exactly how they're all feeling.
Yeah, so he didn't...
The uncivilized world.
So he hasn't actually talked to any Russian people at all about it. And he was coming, like, so strongly, like, in support of a boycott. And it was just... I don't know. I don't know how I feel about Dan Savage. Because on one hand, he's really awesome. And then when it comes to stuff like this, he's just not great. And I think a lot of, like... He gets brought on TV in the US as, like, a pundit to talk about whenever there's anything queer-related going on. It's like, what does Dan Savage think? Mm. And he's not actually the best spokesperson for all of the gays.
All queer people.
Yeah.
All queers all the time.
Yeah.
A lot of people might actually know Dan Savage best from the It Gets Better campaign. That was his, wasn't it?
That was him.
That was Dan Savage.
Which, like, so...
I also have issues with.
Yeah, there are problems with it. Like, so It Gets Better. It was basically a series of videos that even, like, Barack Obama and the Google team, like, joined in on. Like, everybody did one. I didn't because I'm a hipster. Because I hate gay kids.
I got better before it was cool.
So, like, instead of tackling, like, bullying or anything in schools, it's just like, hey, it's shit now, but you'll get through it eventually and then it'll be fine. Which, I mean, is true, because, like, schools' initiatives to tackle homophobic bullying are shit. But, yeah, it's...
I don't want it to get better in the future. I want it to be better now. Yeah. I don't want to be in school thinking, well, as I'm getting the shit beaten out of me, at least in 10 years' time, things will be all right.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, what is the suicide rate for queer youth is...
Oh, it's ridiculously high.
Yeah, so, yeah, like... yeah, it's sort of reformism versus revolution, which is the binary that I've been viewing everything in recently. I must have read some book recently that has...
That's just imprinted this idea in your head.
Yeah, that's literally with every debate we've had recently. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We didn't say where we're from, why we're doing this show. We just launched straight into it.
We live in London. We're from the north. That's why we sound like this. and we're doing it because we're both queers.
Yeah, yeah.
Not in like a nasty way. Not in like the like aggressive derogatory way. way of saying yeah. queers. But we both identify sociopolitically as queer people.
You just reminded me of that socioeconomic guy from that episode of Buffy.
Buffy, yeah.
Yeah, so I think, like, so queer for me, I feel like this is a conversation we'll have to have quite a lot.
Yeah.
Means that you are sort of politically engaged with your sexuality and gender.
That's a far better way of wording it than I would ever would have.
How would you have worded it?
I don't even know. I honestly couldn't have put it into better words.
Yeah, I'm good at words.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you. So, I guess we'll move on to our next topic now. And I'm sort of really apprehensive to talk about this because I don't know what happened at the VMAs.
I do.
So, can you explain what the VMAs are, who performed?
Okay,
blah, blah, blah.
So the VMAs are the Video Music Awards. This is the one that... So, Gaga performed it, Macklemore performed at it with Mary Lambert, and also with Jennifer Hudson, because apparently Mary Lambert wasn't good enough to sing her own song. and Miley Cyrus and Robin Thicke. So I really want to talk about Same Love and Macklemore at some point, so we'll save that for another show, and we're going to talk about Gaga in a bit. But I thought it'd be really interesting to discuss Miley Cyrus and her performance at the VMAs, and also her new video, and a lot of ideas around like sexuality and people embracing their sexuality, and pop stars and their sexuality, and also why Robin Thicke is one of the worst people alive at the moment.
So we just watched his video because I'm not great on pop culture and you're pretty good on pop culture.
It's the first time I watched it yesterday, actually, and I was like...
Because we'd heard of it because of its reputation for being very rapey.
Mm.
So we avoided it. And I actually had heard the song before, I didn't realise I had. Mm. But yeah, we watched the like uncensored version of it and it's sort of... I mean, nudity is fine, but it's...
It's yeah, that's like... That's just a dirty man being really dirty around naked women, and they are just like so objectified and so sexualized, and all personality and life is drained out of them, and they are literally they're just like wallpaper hangings, just there for him to masturbate over.
But Anne Farrell as well.
Anne Farrell. Pharrell! I thought we had you. You sang with Daft Punk. Although that Daft Punk song is a little bit rapey as well.
Because that was a really good song when it came out, and we were dancing to it in Willow in York, and we were listening, we were trying to sing along.
Did you just plug the Willow in York?
Yeah. Either love it or hate it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I remember we sort of made a bit of eye contact, and we were like, she's here to have fun. I'm here to get lucky.
I'm going to hang around her until I can get on it.
Yeah, that was kind of the message of that. So yeah.
It's so damn catchy.
It is catchy. But luckily, this Robin Thicke Blurred Lines one isn't catchy.
It's boring and horrible.
I mean, there are some lyrics that we would like to read out before we get back to Miley Cyrus.
Yeah. So, there's just so many to go at. So the pre-chorus is... Okay, now he was close, tried to domesticate you, but you're an animal, baby, it's in your nature, just let me liberate you. There's nothing liberating going on in that song at all.
No. I think that's really tame.
Yeah, it gets, you the hottest bitch in this place? I think I make it sound sexier with a broad Yorkshire accent.
Yeah, I think you do.
I'm maybe taking the edge off it a little bit. So the chorus is, you're a good girl, can't let it get past me, you're far from plastic, talk about getting blasted, I hate these blurred lines, I know you want it, I hate them lines. but you're a good girl. The way you grab me must wanna get nasty. Go ahead, get at me.
And all I can think of, I mean, maybe this is just me, but like, it sounds like she's trying to beat him away from her, and he's like, no, I know you want it. I can tell you like it rough. And that's really, sorry, this is really triggering. We'll add a trigger warning in at the start, I guess, because, but it sounds like a sexual assault.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
I also think, like, just this line, I hate these blurred lines, sounds a lot like he's saying, I hate the idea that women can be anything more than just my sexual object.
No, but
it feels really like I hate seeing this women becoming like the man and things like this, and I want the old ways back.
Is it, to me, it's like, so the lines, it like in the song, it seems like that's the line of consent, and the line is blurry in his head because he can't figure out when it's too much or not enough, you know, with his, like, sexual aggression. And I think the idea of the lines being blurry is quite a, like, men's rights activist type idea. Because when it comes to, like, having sex, the lines of consent aren't blurry. Either you say yes or no, and that's not a blurry line, that's one or the other.
Yeah.
That's really simple. There is a firm line of consent. Did they consent to it?
No.
So it's not a blurry line. It's you've crossed the line and you're a rapist now.
Men's rights activists, we should also do like a special on. Because I could go to town on talking about men's rights and all the shit that I have seen recently about, sexism. That old chestnut.
So yeah, I mean, the whole song is pretty terrible. So why is it so important that we talk about Miley Cyrus's impact on this?
Because Miley Cyrus was grinding against this singer on the VMAs I don't want anyone to think that I'm not really, really pro-sexuality. And if you want to, like, embrace your body and your sexuality, then that is, like, fucking mega right on, and I'm totally happy with that. But sometimes don't. Sometimes there's a line between being empowered by your sexuality and like being like having your sexuality owned by the powers that be. Must have been watching too much Angel.
No, the patriarchy.
The patriarchy. Yeah.
Would you say a blurred line?
Yeah. No. No, Robin Thicke. No. And I think so. Miley Cyrus appears out of a teddy bear, and I think this was the thing. I think this whole performance was like her trying to make this, I'm a grown-up now statement. So she comes out of this teddy bear and dances with some teddy bears and then strips off down to this, like, flesh-coloured plastic bikini and then is, like, really, really twerking all over. Twerking is something that everyone should know by now. It's a dance move. It's one of this year's big crazes alongside Gangnam Style.
Was that only this year?
No, that must have been last year. How old am I?
Very old.
400. So I don't know. How do you feel about, like, the ideas of, like, the patriarchy control, the objectification of women against women being able to claim their own sexuality and their own bodies?
So I think the thing that's sort of upsetting me most about the Miley Cyrus story is, so it seems to be, because we don't objectify women very often, like, we try not to do it, because it's, I mean, we're not, neither of us are totally hugely sexually attracted to women, so I feel like even though we won't overtly sexualize women, I think there's still like an undercurrent of patriarchal thought that goes on in our head, which we're obviously trying as hard as we can to get away from. But when you've been raised in this society, it's very hard to do that. I'm going to have to preface everything I say with like a big, long...
Rather than jumping straight into it like I do and then mumbling halfway through when you realise that you sound like a fascist.
So the idea is that women should be as young and as pretty as possible, right? Otherwise, they're not worth anything in the eyes of the patriarchy. And Miley Cyrus seems to... I mean, we're also assuming that she hasn't got any of her own agency here, which... Can we make that claim? I don't know. Mm. But does she have much say in what she's wearing or dancing to? Maybe she does.
Maybe.
But it does seem like she's sort of a commercial product, and maybe that's us putting our own thoughts on it. So what I'm trying to say is the sexualization of, like, childhood and that 16-year-old girls are really sexy for the patriarchy. And Miley Cyrus is 20 now, right? But she's still playing the I'm a young girl who, you know, come and get me daddy type thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really... Like, this performance is just so, so sexual. Like, she's got this big firm finger, and she's, like, running it between her legs like she's got a penis. And yeah, it's just a really, like... I mean, she just looks a bit crazy for a lot of it. Like wild, wild, and... And yeah, it's like there's no control there, and no, like, she's not really doing it for any real purpose other than to just be like a bit of a hot mess is the word I really wanted to use there.
Yeah, I think it's sort of important because she's performing alongside like proven fucking creepy misogynist Robin Thicke, who does nothing but sexualize women in his latest song. And I don't know if this is his latest. This could have been
like
months ago.
I think this is like his first song.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But yeah, she's becoming that sort of object. And I think it's sort of kind of sad because it looks like she's trying to take away her own agency, which is not an empowered action. And maybe we're kind of wrong in judging her for that. But I feel, I don't know, it just doesn't, it looks really exploitative.
Yeah, and because she's also got this new music video out for Wrecking Ball, and in that, I mean, I didn't feel as bad about this. Like, so she's riding around on a big wrecking ball, completely naked, and I was like, yeah, okay, she's young, and she's naked, but like, yeah, Lady Gaga's done it, and Rihanna's done it, and Katy Perry's done it, and. So why shouldn't Miley Cyrus do it, being an artist in her own rights like that? But it is a case of it feels like she's like lost her own agency in that scenario, and she doesn't have the control. It's like someone's going, take off your clothes and get on that wrecking ball and fillet this hammer. Which also happens in the video. And yeah, she's just like in underwear a lot.
Yeah, I mean...
It could be completely wrong. She could be like really like, yeah, I'm embracing my body and I feel sexy and I want to look sexy, and that's totally fine if that's how she feels. But like, there's something unsettling about the whole thing. I don't know. Yeah. But at the same time, I think people are maybe going... too far the other way and being like, no, she's a child star and she has to remain in that box forever, which is just as oppressive. So
and she's an adult, she's 20, so she can do what she wants, but like,
and because I've always been so like, you know, Gaga dances around in her underwear, Beyonce dances around in her underwear, and I am like, fuck yeah, you go for it, you know. They own everything that they're doing. Yeah, you know, you watch Beyonce, and Beyonce wears those little cat suits and whatever, and she looks absolutely phenomenal. But it's not, she doesn't do it for the gratification of men. She does it because she's like, I am totally fucking massive and fierce, and I own the world. Girls.
Are we going to talk about Beyonce quite a lot?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I guess that's the end of our news segment. We actually spent far more time on both of those topics than I thought we would. So we're already better at this than I think we are, or more rambly.
Possibly rambly. That second part could do with a lot of editing.
Probably I am probably not going to edit any of that.
I'll just put it out there. Yeah. If people hate me, it's too late now, Daniel. You said it.
So yeah, we're at the music section, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you want a drink of water?
I'll get my.
Have your posh juice.
I nearly spilled that all over the piano. That made me sound so middle class. Oh, I nearly spilled it all over the grand.
My high juice. It's not, it's Ribena. It's Ribena.
My Robinson's high juice. Oh, we are middle class.
So we have a song which has a lot of significance to us, I think, which is, what's the... Tennessee by High Dive, and this was suggested to me by I heard it on Take Nothing Leave Everything. And that's when I got into a conversation with CJ, who runs that show, about its significance. And you will wait, should we play it first and then talk about it?
I think that's a good idea.
Okay and loose anarchists.
Yeah because then people will understand why we're talking about it.
Yeah, so here's Tennessee by High Dive.
Sexy.
Thanks.
I was on my lunch break. I almost started crying for the boy at the top of the bridge. He didn't jump, but if he had, he wouldn't be the only one who thought that he had to give in. Said you didn't have it all that bad, and I said I didn't have it all that bad. But I stuck off to parking lots and playgrounds after dark. My parents' basement while they were asleep. I didn't talk with a lisp. I dressed like all the straight boys did. I didn't talk about who I had kissed. Grocery store, and I don't kiss you at the library. I don't kiss you at the rest stop off the interstate, and I don't kiss you at my parents' house when they are not asleep. I was on my lunch break. I almost started crying, cause it really does get better if you wait. And there are times that when I still feel afraid, but gone are the times when I feel ashamed. And so for all the kids that really have it pretty bad, for all the kids that never got the chance, well, maybe I should kiss you at the grocery store, and maybe I should kiss you at the library. Maybe I should kiss you my parents' house, and maybe I should kiss you at the movies. Maybe I should kiss you when we go out to dinner, and maybe I should kiss you every night before I fall asleep, and maybe I should kiss you at the rest stop off the interstate on the border of Georgia and
so that was Tennessee by High Dive. Oh,
I see how we
seamless
do this now.
Editing.
I could have actually done with listening to it, so we could have prepared ourselves for it. But all right, let's go straight into it.
We know what it's about.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely love that song. Because I think it's something that we both feel a lot of the time, like the idea of can I walk down the street holding hands with you, in case anyone doesn't know, we're a couple.
Oh yeah, we've got to mention. Yeah, so,
yeah. So yeah, it's this fear. Can you know every time I walk down the street and I want to hold hands, and we have to look around, or if you want to have a quick kiss, and you know I don't think either of us are like really big on PDA, like.
But maybe I would be if there wasn't this societal stigma of. Gays kissing, they're going to burn to death.
Oh, but I hate seeing straight people kissing in public.
But that's because it's disgusting. But, I mean, gay people is totally natural and normal. So, like, I don't... I think I worry about it far more than you do. But I'm quite a worrier.
I'm a warrior.
So I guess we're, as you may have noticed, we talk about sex quite a lot already, and I think we're going to talk about sex a lot on the show.
Yeah.
Not sex with each other, because that's too personal. But, like, also...
And we don't have it.
And we don't have it. But also, mental health, I think, is going to be a big component. And I think, I'm not sure whether, like, which feeds into the other, me having quite strong anxiety first, you know, or the fact that people, like gay people and queer people, get beaten up for expressing themselves. Their gender or sexuality.
I think for me it's more that one because we both suffer from big anxiety issues. I think we like have them like differently, like it affects us differently. I think when I'm out in public, I feel a lot. I'm fine with the idea of holding hands with you and stuff where I feel safe. Because you make me feel safe as well. Like, so, like, holding hands with you, if I was having, like, anxiety issues in terms of just being on the outside world, which is terrifying, like, when you're with me, it feels more comfortable. And I'm fine with that.
It's so romantic.
I'll write a song about it. But, yeah, the thing for me is always... If I give you a kiss, is someone going to come up behind me and hit me around the head with a crowbar or something like that? Am I going to get pushed into the road for giving you a peck on the cheek before I go to work? I don't think in Primrose Hill we're likely to get clubbed to death. It's full of gays.
We don't live in Primrose Hill.
No.
We are serfs. We live in Peckham. Yeah. We commute to Primrose Hill to work for posh people.
Yeah. We are not the posh people, we are their slaves.
Yeah. Yeah. We came from the north.
to work at King's Landing.
So that was a Game of Thrones joke for all you nerds out there. I'm going to a Game of Thrones themed pub quiz tonight.
I'm going to see Jay Brannan. Oh my god, I'm going to see Jay Brannan tonight. Mine's better.
Mine's nerdier.
Mine's more relevant to the podcast because he's queer and he's in the film Short Bus.
Which is a good film.
Which is an excellent film and taught me lots of things about sexuality.
Mm. So we didn't really talk about Tennessee at all, though. I guess, yeah, and High Dive are just really good. You should get their album. They're really, really good.
Yeah.
I think the album's free as well. Yeah. So go to highdive.bandcamp.com. Also on like our Tumblr posts, soon to be a website, I hope, when one of us gets paid. Yeah, we'll have links to their Bandcamp where you can download all their stuff.
Tennessee actually kind of links into the It Gets Better thing as well, doesn't it? Because it's like, you know...
He sings a line about that.
Yeah. It really does get better if you wait. And he sounds like he's about to cry when he sings it, and it always makes me want to cry. But it's like... I think at the same time, there's a lot of the lines in that song are like, we are doing this now for these kids, rather than... Sorry. I've got hand motions.
Really expressive, noisy hands.
Sorry. You know, we're doing this now for these kids who have it really shit, because it does get better, but it should be better now, and we should embrace the freedom that we have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think...
Take that, Dan Savage.
I think, like, the... Dan Savage isn't, like, a bad guy, I don't think.
No. I think he's nice.
Yeah, and I love his show.
Yeah.
Like, I listen to it quite a lot, but I don't feel uncomfortable criticizing him. I think, like, the idea here of, like, amplifying our voices is so that, like, because when I was like young and queer and really scared and nervous and whatever, like I didn't know that there was like media like this that existed, and I'm sure it did exist. Like podcasts were a thing like 8 years ago, whenever. I didn't know that. And I wish I'd had something like this to listen to. So hopefully with the addition of pop culture and music, we can push our radical queer politic on top of you.
I don't know if they were really a thing.
That sounded really rapey.
Back when I was growing up, back in my day, with dial-up internet and things like that.
I had dial-up when I was 14.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh. I had dial-up till I was 16.
Oh, yeah, but you grew up in the mountains.
Yeah, I did.
Like a wild thing. Like a wildling.
No, one of the hill tribes.
One of the hill tribes. There we go.
Yeah, so let's get on to our next topic. Do you want to break it? Or are you fine?
I'm fine.
You're fine. Well, we've actually sped through like 40 minutes of this, and we have just given no thought to structure whatsoever.
Not at all.
No. So introduce this topic, please.
So we're going to talk about Lady Gaga at the iTunes Festival. I really wanted to go to this. I applied for tickets. I was like, yeah, Gaga in that tiny space. That'd be really fun. And then we watched it, and I'm really glad I didn't go. Because it looked really sad. It looked like the saddest performance by someone who has given up on life. And so I saw Lady Gaga back in 2010 when she was doing the Monster Ball tour. And let's put aside some of the issues with Gaga for a while and just talk about how amazing she is as a performer, because she is absolutely phenomenal as a performer. She's a brilliant singer. She's a great dancer. She has exceptional ideas conceptually for like performance and staging and things like that. And every single performance that she gives is completely different. And you know, all the TV performances that she does are always really different. And she's so involved in all of this, which I think is really, really cool. And she's, you know, she is an artist, and she creates a lot of things, and I think that's really, really cool. And there's a lot more to her, I think, than people give her credit for on the immediate surface. So I went to see her in 2010, and the Monster Ball tour was absolutely amazing. And you know, I really like a lot of the songs from that era. And you could watch her, and she just loved it. She was having the best time what she was doing. So like, I've always like kept up with Lady Gaga to see what she was going to do next and things like that. And then obviously I wanted to go see her on the Born This Way ball and couldn't get tickets. And then it all got cancelled anyway because she had this hip injury. And then she seems to have like just lost it. It's all gone and it's been drained from her. And she just looked really like dead-eyed.
Yeah, she did. So she said she'd had a couple of drinks, didn't she, like, before the show, and, like, I don't know, she just didn't, she seemed really hollow, and I feel like we've used quite a bit of, like, I don't know, that seems quite gendered to me, like, dead-eyed and hollow, like, I don't feel like men get that as much, but...
That's because all men are dead-eyed.
That's true. I don't know, she just didn't seem, I don't know, with it.
She just wasn't involved. She wasn't connected to anything that she was doing at all, was she? It was just really, like... I mean, I know it was new. It was a really new performance and stuff.
Wasn't it the first live performance?
Yeah, it was the first live performance of a lot of these songs. And, yeah, so... And, you know, she's recovering from this hip injury and stuff like that. But, yeah, she just didn't seem, like, connected to the stuff that she was doing at all. And then before every song, she spoke for ages about how empty she felt and how unhappy she was and stuff. And it seemed like people weren't picking up on that. But she seemed to be talking quite deeply about how really sad she felt a lot of the time.
How depressed she was.
And a lot of these songs were really like, I'm really, really sad, and I want people to realize that I am a human being. And it was like, it just felt like a really sad performance. And I think, so we really wanted to talk about this for the things she was saying about when she did Born This Way, and then how she went on to this album, like in a wanting to come out way, weren't we?
Yeah, and the idea of sort of veiling and de-veiling, yeah. Which is that's Orientalist.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about like the legacy of her queer activism?
So yeah, I think she's always been seen as a gay icon, I guess. Icons are things that maybe we should talk about at some other point, and especially like a lot of gay icons. I think that'd be a really interesting topic to discuss. So yeah, but she's like this big modern gay icon. She seems to have like knocked Madonna off her pedestal a bit because everyone realized that Madonna's a bit horrible, and Gaga seemed a bit nice, and everyone was a bit happier with that. So and you know. So when The Fame came out, and I think it's a lot of this, you know, theatricality, and she really embraced the idea of being a bit weird and a bit different, which a lot of queer people really cling on to because they spent their whole lives feeling like others and outsiders. And she, you know, she came onto the scene and said, that's really cool to be different, and we should all get together and embrace this.
And still enjoy dancey pop music.
Yeah, and still enjoy pop music. And she writes damn good pop music. I would like to throw this out there and say that people should be more accepting of pop music. Because I know it's getting some bad rep, but pop music is okay. It's not all terrible, and we should be able to appreciate some good pop music, and she writes it, which is another good thing. So, and you know, so she had The Fame, she had a song called Boys, Boys, Boys on that, and ever since she first started performing that, she before every gig she'd say, this one's for the gays, and then dedicate this song about having sex with boys to gay people having sex with boys. And you know, she has always been a spokesperson.
Well, she has acted as a spokesperson.
Yeah, she's been a very big advocate for queer rights as well, because she, more than just saying I love gay men, she's openly bisexual, and she has addressed she tours with a transgendered person called Posh, who performs every night with her on stage, and she's always been like immersed in a lot of alternative scenes and things like that, and she is embracing and advocating of queer people, which is really cool, and I mean, there's a lot of criticism for her saying that she's using it for her own agenda. And it's like, well, yeah, kind of. And yeah, she shouldn't really like use gay people, but at the same time, at least she's like saying something more than a lot of other people are saying. And at least she's not like fucking Katy Perry, who releases songs like You're So Gay and I Kissed a Girl. And then she goes, I really like gay people. Because no. No, Katy Perry.
And we can get into the finer points of that debate at some point.
Yeah.
I was going to bring up, like, with some more of the criticism for Gaga, because, you know, I think our dynamic is going to be, you're the good cop, I'm just a pessimist. So,
good cop, pessimistic cop.
Good cop wants to die cop. So the idea of Born This Way was that, I think, like, the main message of it, like, was that gay people, I'm saying gay people on purpose here rather than queer people, gay people are born their sexuality and that's how it works. And I think it was more of, like, combating the enemies, you know, like, combating homophobia was the idea. Like, this is just how we are, we're born this way. And like, to tell homophobes that, because homophobes think it's a learned social condition thing, and that's why it can be cured and whatever. Like, Born This Way as an idea is really good to combat that, I think. So in queer circles, the idea of Born This Way isn't great because sort of a lot of people are not born that way. You know, you can be in a straight relationship for the first 40 years of your life and then go, hey, I think I'm gay. And sometimes that's not like a hidden passion that's always been there your whole life. It's just like, it just happens and that's how it works now. And like, I don't want to talk with too much authority about transitioning, but I know a lot of trans people. Look at me name dropping. Like, I've spoken to trans people. I've read work from trans people saying like they weren't born as like the sex that they are now or the gender they are now, and they've transitioned and they're that way now. Mm. I mean, Gaga does she use the word transgender?
She sings. No matter gay, straight, or bi, lesbian, transgendered life. And, I mean, I know that doesn't make the greatest of sense, but that song got to number one, and she sang transgendered, and that is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not enough, but it's like, it's a really good
step. It's more than, like,
anyone
ever has done, in the charts. So, you know, it's more than anyone's ever done for queer rights, ever. Saint Gaga.
Yeah, but yeah, so yeah, that was good, but I mean there are problems with it. So let's get on to her performance at the iTunes Festival, because actually, like, I'm not hugely into her music, and the new album, the new material isn't great.
No.
But I mean, we still both stood awkwardly and hovered around your laptop instead of sitting down and watching it. Like, we both didn't want to appear engaged, but we're very engaged.
Yeah,
by
it was like we were both going to do, like little... other things, and we just sort of watch it, and then we ended up literally standing for the entire hour watching it on my laptop, just standing there in the kitchen watching it.
Why did we stand?
I don't know, because I was making brownies and then I didn't make the brownies.
Yeah, it was captivating and it was really interesting to see what she was doing now. And like, the first, I mean, obviously, like, there's a big, like, orientalist type, I hope I'm using that word right, Hussein, if you're listening, correct me. So her first song, and the whole concept of the album is like her hiding behind a mask and always wearing like big wigs and costumes and things and not being seen as the person she is. So in her first song, what was the song called?
Aura.
She's sort of wearing it's not technically a burqa. But that's the idea, I think, behind the fashionable dress she's wearing and the eye and the hair. And, it's this sort of appropriative thing that she's doing, I guess. Or maybe not even her, but like her designer has gone, hey, you should make a burqa sexy. Because they're not greatly sexy. but for a white woman to wear a burqa and then be like, I'm going to remove this and I'll be liberated, sort of echoes a lot of the ways that Westerners look at the burqa, which, I mean, this is more of an In the Sprawl topic than a queer punks topic, but like, there's a debate going on in the UK at the moment, because there's a fucking MP that wants to ban the burqa in public places. You're looking confused.
I didn't know about this.
This is a thing. So France and Denmark already have this.
They really?
Yes, really, yeah. And like, it's really stupid because we look at it as like a really oppressive item of clothing to wear, but then we're telling people, in order to not be oppressed, you can't do this thing that you want to do. So we're actually taking away their right to wear what they want to wear. So it's actually really oppressive, and I feel like Gaga appropriating that as a white woman is kind of really appropriative. Do you see how it's problematic?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I said problematic.
Problematic.
For the first of many times.
I was going to say, we've managed to avoid problematic for this entire show. That will not happen again.
Now that we know it's there.
We shall be throwing it out there left, right, and centre.
Yeah.
Problematic's a very good word to use in a lot of situations involving Lady Gaga, unfortunately. Bless her.
But yeah, I feel sort of sorry for her now, and I feel like this is a running theme with women, and I was talking about women in this show already.
Oh, yeah.
But like, and obviously that's not right, but there was a lot about the performance that I felt bad for her, and I feel like this whole fame thing, which was the big focus of her first few albums, has really got to her, and I'm sort of, how we need to analyze this from a queer perspective, don't we? Like, so the idea of like de-veiling is you know, that was the overt metaphor she's yeah. using, but she also talks a lot about coming out, and she's trying to come out as the person she is inside. And that's, I mean, that's kind of appropriative, but as a queer person, I don't feel like it's actually that bad, kind of.
Yeah, no, I didn't feel like, because, yeah, I see what you mean by that sort of, the metaphor of her coming out of her,
Shell,
yeah, her like big Lady Gaga shell to being this person that's on the inside that's obviously feeling very, very hurt, very like abandoned by like everyone by the looks of it. She just seemed really, and she literally stripped down, didn't she? Like she started off in all these big costumes, and by the end, she was sat wearing a t-shirt and shorts with her natural hair and no makeup on, and it was like, and she literally said, "This is me. This is literally me." And it was like, she's done a really big piece about how she took off everything and all the gigantic wig and things like that to be just her sitting at a piano singing, "I just want to be loved," and I was like, oh, Gaga. I wish you'd written some better songs but to express these feelings, but yeah, I feel for you. I'm feeling you. Yeah. That last song, I'd rather... what was it? I'd rather be poor and happy than rich and alone.
Yeah, like, literally that's what she was singing over and over, and people were almost singing along with her, even though they haven't heard this song before. But still, I think... it's really difficult for mainstream audiences to understand that message because it just sounds like a really empty sentiment, doesn't it? It's just like, yeah, love is better than money, but like she looked so broken and so lonely, and I don't know what we can do, if anything, but I think...
help Lady Gaga.
Yeah, so pledge your money to the Save Lady Gaga Fund. Like, but like... so she's got all this money and she's got all this fame and I mean, she obviously has friends and stuff, but like, fucking Facebook. And you got a text at the same time.
It's your mum.
Oh, go away.
Sharon.
All right, so.
Sorry.
That's all right. I don't know what I was saying there. Do we have any closing thoughts on Lady Gaga? Because we need to do our other song.
No, I think we've discussed aspects of it that needed bringing out into the open. Like, I don't think anyone else in the world seemed to realise that Lady Gaga is trapped, and we need to free her.
But like, okay, so like mental health, like she looks like she's suffering from depression.
Yeah.
Like, and she was talking about stuff that we can both relate to.
Yeah.
Of feeling very isolated, even when she's got all these people around her.
But I think that's the thing. I think I, like, watching it, I felt really connected to the performance still, because she was talking about things where I was like, yeah, I've felt like that, and I know exactly. And then afterwards, I was like, literally not a person there was feeling the same. They were just going, oh yeah, she's being really deep, but not actually thinking why she was being really deep or why she was talking about the things she was talking about.
I'm sure there were like two people standing near the front of that crowd who were like, oh my god, why are you all cheering?
Yeah, probably.
Not dissimilar to our experience at the Roundhouse.
Yeah. Ah, yes. Amanda Palmer, another topic for another day.
Yeah, we kind of love Amanda Palmer, but we will get back to that. I think that, because that's actually been at the forefront of my mind while we've been talking about Gaga here.
Yeah.
Because that, yeah, she needs talked about.
Yeah.
She needs a stern talking to.
Yeah.
That woman.
That Amanda, that's another woman for us to address and feel sorry for, because apparently that's what this show's already turned into.
Yeah, it wasn't meant to be like this.
Daniel and Jack's patronising hour.
Yeah. So we'll do more queer theory next time, I think.
Yeah, let's be a bit more queer next time.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, this was an intro to us talking about news and stuff, I think.
Yeah. You'll get a good gist from this, at least, of the things that I know about and the thing that Jack knows about, namely politics for Jack and Lady Gaga for Daniel.
Hey, and Cher.
And Cher.
Don't patronise yourself.
Oh, I know pretty much, like, all the divas. I'll bring divas to the table. You bring, theory and politics and really intellectual stuff, and I'll bring Cher and back to share.
So we have another song. Should we play the song first and then do an outro, or should we do our outro and then play the song as the outro?
We should play the song as the outro, I think. Yeah,
okay.
So
yeah. So I'm Jack.
I'm Daniel.
Yeah, we should have like an outro spiel that we say. Spiel. You can follow us on Twitter at QPunks, which is QPUNX. Our Tumblr is qpunks.tumblr.com. You can probably search for us on Facebook by now at just search Queer Punks with an X.
Yeah. I'm Daniel versus the World, which is Dan vs the World.
Oh yeah, you have
Twitter.
Music and stuff. You should plug that.
Yeah, I have music. And you can listen to that. And Jack has another podcast, which is In the Sprawl.
Yeah, which is at Sprawlcast. You should follow that one as well. Yeah, that's good.
So, yeah, we're like all over Twitter.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, Twitter can't get enough of us.
Not enough.
It's kind of had enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our second song.
Our second song.
Yeah.
This song is just mint. This is by No Ditching. And they are, like, the most rad girl band of all time ever.
Yeah, they're like a sort of, I guess, pop-punk band from Durham. Obviously, Durham, birthplace of all the best bands, it seems. And they have great songs about, like...
rats and Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, and this is their song about Gilmore Girls. It's called I Should Read in Bed, I Watch Gigi Instead. And you'll love it. And their EP, if you go to noditching.bandcamp.com, their EP is like £3, and it's like,
worth it.
It's worth it. I mean, it look, you'll be like 4 tracks, 7 minutes, but it's surprisingly amazing. Mm. Not even surprisingly, it was going to be great, and it lives up and exceeds expectations.
It was a hard choice which of the 4 songs we actually wanted to use today, because they are all, like, really, really great.
Yeah, but seeing as though once we've got permission, I guess, from No Ditching, we're going to be using this song as our intro music, we thought on our first show we'd give it some airtime.
Yeah. And hopefully one day soon we'll actually be able to interview one or all or some or two of No Ditching.
You're weird.
Yeah. I'll get better at this, I promise.
Good. All right. Bye. Thanks for listening and stuff.
Bye.
No Ditching. There's a beggar in such a hollow, and it's